disappeared with his daughters and then got reconciled with Laban, who came after him to find out what was going on. And this week's story is the time, for the first time for many years, that he meets his brother, Esau. Family relationships for many people can be the hardest of all to handle. Unlike other relationships, you don't pick your family. They're who you get. Jacob had now amassed quite a fortune. He'd started out with nothing. He'd left, run away from home. And you may remember that story from a few weeks back. He'd basically got the clothes he was wearing and had arrived at his relative's house and had worked there for many years and had looked after the flocks, had married two of the daughters, had now had a whole host of flocks of his own and family and children. And now he's coming back to where he set out from. And he and his relative Laban had been trying to outwit each other for many years. And we heard about how that worked out. And Jacob still hasn't left behind this kind of desperate need to be a trickster, to outwit people. But for whatever reason, he decides to come back and to meet his brother again. We read how he sent out messengers to let Esau know he was coming back. Now, we're not told, and I don't know why he did this. He could have moved on anywhere. Okay, it got too hot to handle where he was with Laban, but this was back in the days before border controls, passports, all that kind of jazz. He could just have gone anywhere that there was pasture. He didn't have to go back to Israel, but he decided he would. Possibly he was realizing that he couldn't keep running forever, and it was time that he made peace with his brother. That's brave. He's been away for about 20 years. That's a long time. And as far as we know, he'd had no real contact with his brother at all in that interval. I don't know whether that rings any bells with any of you, either for yourself, with your family situation, or with people you know. Last month, a friend of mine on Facebook had a reconciliation with her mum, from whom she's been estranged for 24 years. In fact, she has a fake name on Facebook to keep away from other members of her family with whom she's had this difficult relationship. And one Saturday afternoon, she just posted on Facebook, "Today is a very strange day. Over 24 years ago, I stopped talking to my mother. Today I got the biggest sorry ever from my mother for the abuse I suffered. I'm feeling a bit weirded out, I'll say." I've heard a little bit over the years from her, but I can really only guess what it was like for her when this happened. And there's been a couple of pictures up on Facebook of her and her mum, who look so alike, it's not true, side by side. And it's been really good to see that happening. Now, Jacob's family life is a little complicated. Here's a picture coming up that I put together some years back. I did a sermon about Jacob and his family. It's a make-up page of Facebook, as if it had been there in 1747 BC, of what Jacob's family looks like. He's the person for whom that relationship status, "it's complicated," was designed for. Because I've shown there he's married to Leah and Rachel, but he's also got two maidservants who he's also married to. So it's kind of complicated. And if we focus in on his kind of immediate family, we've got Isaac, Rebecca, his brother. Those are the kind of three people. Now, as far as we know, by this stage in this story, his mother's actually died. She's certainly not recorded as being around. But we've got Isaac and Esau, who he tricked. He persuaded his dad to give him the birthright that belonged to his brother. So I imagine neither of them are very happy about that. And he'd had to leave home because it had got too tough for him. And his ally at home, the one who'd put him up for all this, was his mother, Rebecca, who's now gone. So his ally isn't there. So he's coming back. So I suspect he's a little terrified. He's coming back. His kind of chickens are coming home to roost, so to speak. What's going to happen? And then he sends these messengers ahead of him to Esau, and he doesn't just get told, yeah, Esau's coming to meet you. He gets told, Esau and 400 men are coming to meet you. Okay, let me think. Are they bringing presents? Not sure about that. I suspect possibly not. So I imagine he's really getting quite worried. So in a scene a bit reminiscent of the Puss in Boots fairy story, which you may possibly remember, he dispatches groups of servants ahead of him with kind of flocks and herds. And the idea is that if they meet Esau's men coming the other way, they say, here's a present from our master, Jacob, to try and sort of butter him up, calm him down. Chapter 33 is the denouement, really, of the story in some ways. But just before this chapter, Jacob had spent a long, dark night wrestling with somebody. At the end of the night, Jacob is still undefeated, and this man turns out to be God, who gives Jacob a new name, calls him Israel, which, different phrases what it might mean, but something like he struggles with God. And then this person dislocates Jacob's hip. So from then on, in the rest of his life, he walks with a limp. Ouch. I've never dislocated my hip, but my godson did playing rugby. It doesn't sound like something I want to have happen to me. Don't know if anyone here has got a dislocated hip at any point, but it's not good. So he's had no sleep, he's been wrestling all night, and his hip's out. What's the point of the hip being out? It's to teach him something about not relying on his strength. He can't even walk properly now. His strength's just gone. And then Esau's arriving, and here we have Esau turning up. Now, I was struck this time, I've not noticed it before, when I was reading the story, was in the verse 4 where they meet, Esau runs to meet him. I remember hearing something about the story of the Good Samaritan, not Good Samaritan, I'm not talking about, the prodigal son. And that in Middle Eastern culture, grown men don't run, because it's a loss of dignity. If you run, it's because you're a messenger being sent, or you're like a kid. But in the story of the prodigal son, we see that the man runs to his son. And in this story, we see that Esau is the one that runs. He is making the first move, running towards his brother. It's the wrong way around. It's Jacob is the one who's trickster and who should be the one giving up his dignity. But Esau doesn't care. He's so happy to see his brother back that he runs to greet him. So in this story, we've got Jacob and Esau, but actually they're not the way around we might expect. Esau is the one, in this sense, modeling God. I think that's part of what this story is about, and the name change that Jacob had. God saying, look, you're the trickster. You think you can get things sorted and do it all yourself, but actually I'm there ahead of you. And you think you need all these tricks to get your brother on your side, but actually he's more willing to accept you than you are to accept him. And all that worry and running and sending all the herds ahead to try and kind of butter up his brother doesn't seem to have been needed. And somehow the tricking of the birthright out of his brother seems to have been forgiven by Esau. So in this story, we see that Jacob tries to make some moves towards his brother, but he didn't really need to. And I think sometimes with difficult relationships in the family, what can happen is both parties think that the other person is unwilling to make a move. And often, in fact, that isn't the situation at all. So here, Jacob was frightened of Esau, but it turned out that he needn't have been. While it's not always the case, I think it certainly can be. And like Jacob, we need to learn that sometimes all our hard struggling and worry and concern and fear about things that we're not quite sure what's going to happen, that isn't the real story. God's gone there ahead and has started to turn things round and sort things out. And the real story is that God is at work in this relationship between Jacob and Esau. And that's more important than whether we think we've covered all the possible contingencies and what might go wrong. I was also reminded of years later when Daniel and his three friends were in Babylon, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have given this ultimatum that they need to worship the huge golden thing that King Nebuchadnezzar has made, or else they'd be put in a blazing furnace of fire. And they reply in Daniel 3:17, "If we're thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O King. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O King, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you've set up." And it's that sort of confidence that we know that our God has got the power to do whatever and to sort out difficult relationships and to resolve things. But even if not, we're still going to be true to what our calling is. Jacob, though, still hasn't quite learnt this. We read in verse 14, he says to Esau, "You go on, I'll follow you more slowly because my flocks and herds need to kind of, if they race too much, they'll all die and it will be over for me. So I'll meet you, join you in Seir." And then Esau says, "Well, let me leave you some men to kind of help and look after everything." And Jacob says, no, we're fine, you know, we'll see you there. Now, I don't know what your geography of Israel is like. Mine's admittedly not awfully good. So I found a map, which hopefully will appear. There's a map, the journeys of Jacob. And to make it easier, I've put a couple of red arrows on it where Peniel and Succoth are. So Peniel's where we are now on the right, and Succoth is where Jacob ends up at the end of the chapter on the left. Okay, question. Anyone know where Seir is? You might have thought it was somewhere in that bit of the map. I mean, it sounds like it. But if we actually have a look at the next picture, it's way down there, bottom end of the Dead Sea. So Jacob can't resist the trickster stuff again. He's met his brother, he's got reconciled, and he says, "Yeah, I'll come with you to Seir." But he's got no intention whatsoever. He doesn't go south, he goes west. So we've still got one more week in this mini-series of Jacob to find out whether he does make it and turn his back on this tricking. But I'm encouraged in this story by God's patience. Jacob seems determined to keep, despite having had this fight with God the night before and have his hip put out of joint. He still seems determined to carry on his old ways and to continue to trick and wheeling and dealing to get what he wants. So what can we learn for ourselves from this story of these two brothers many, many years ago? Well, I'm sure that some of us have got difficult family relationships, and I'm sure that nearly all of us know somebody who's got difficult relationships going back over many years, perhaps as long as 20 years, perhaps longer, or perhaps more recent than that. But they can be really difficult, hard to deal with. They can leave people trying to decide whether what's going on and asked to kind of take sides and things. I think this is an example of one of the cases where a broken relationship was restored, even after this length of time, and should encourage us and give us hope for other cases. Sadly, though, of course, it doesn't always happen. And Paul deals with this later on in one of his letters when he talks about the situation they've got with people where one of the partners, a couple, have become Christians and the other doesn't particularly want to. And he kind of says, well, if you can, if it's possible within you, then live with your un-Christian husband or wife. But if not, and they want to leave you, then so be it. So although it'd be nice to always have a happy ending, there are times when difficult relationships don't get resolved. But I think it's really encouraging to have this story and see the times when things do. And in this case, Jacob makes a move, but finds his brother is already there ahead of him. And family relationships are difficult, and they really get to us when they don't work. And when we don't have good relationships, we can find comfort in our new family, the family of the church. We're all brothers and sisters together of God. As the psalmist put it, if my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will take me up. And we can have that kind of confidence of the relationships with each other. So after talk, in just a minute or two, we're going to sing another song. And you might want to think and pray about a situation that you're aware of or involved in with a difficult relationship. And pray for a way forward and for a sign of hope in that situation where it's very easy to not see a way out. There'll be an opportunity to pray after communion. There'll be a couple of us standing over on the side. So after you've come up for communion, you can come and join us. And we'll be there as well in the song in case you want to have some prayer. Or else, just talk to someone you know around here. But let's remember this story of Jacob and Esau and how, despite the things that Jacob had done, when he got back again together with his brother, he saw the unexpected graciousness of Esau. And thank God that he's still at work in rebuilding and restoring relationships today. Amen.